Dr. Apple would know. She could do something. She's the poisoner. She could... They still call her that?
The ghost of a smile now. A weak thing.
Call her! No. Call her, or I swear by the ancestor I'll track and kill this Neuguin. And then I'll find the Tetragode and start killing the rest of them until there are none left. Nona.
Nona shrugged.
I'm going. I saw her blood trail. It went west towards the river.
She got up.
I believe you're serious.
Kettle looked surprised, though Nona could see no reason for it.
I swear that I will do what I say.
Nona sprang away, starting back along the path that she had broken through the undergrowth.
Nona!
Nona turned. All around Kettle the shadows gathered, a dark mist bleeding through the wind.
Can you reach her?
Kettle sat with her head back against the bark, her face white as death, a tear running from the corner of her eye.
I could always reach her. 1,000 miles wouldn't matter.
She raised an arm, unsteady, and beneath it a shadow blacker than the night stretched out, reaching for infinity, as if the sun had fallen behind her.
It's done. She knows I need her. She knows the direction. You swear it? I swear it. By the ancestor? By the ancestor.
The faintest echo of that grin.
And by the hope, the missing gods who echo in the tunnels, and by the gods too small for names who dance in buttercups and fall with the rain. Now go. For the love of all that's holy, go. You wear me out, Nona. And I've got to concentrate on being alive. It would break her heart to get here and find me dead.
She drew a shallow breath.
They're both in that direction. If you take it until you find some sort of trail, there's a good chance you'll find Ara and the others on it. Try to travel with Ara and Zol. Tarkax may be able to protect you if the Neuguin track you from here.
Another shallow breath snatched in over her pain.
Go! Now!
Nona came forward. She set her canteen in Kettle's lap and kissed her icy forehead. Then she ran. Chapter 41 Clara found Nona before Nona found Ara. She came hurrying along a forest track in the late afternoon, chased by a dark squall.
Nona! Hold up!
Nona turned on the path, relieved, feeling the sweat on her forehead start to freeze as she faced the wind.
You were racing!
Clara came puffing to a halt.
My excuse was trying to catch up to you. What's yours?
The same, Nona grinned.
Are the others safe? I've been imagining awful things. Don't know. You're the first I've seen.
Clara bent over, hands on her thighs, catching her breath.
I got very lost for a while back there, so I'm pretty sure everyone's ahead of us. Ancestor, bleed me! Where in the hells did you get that?
She straightened, staring at the naked blade in Nona's hand, a short sword of Dernish blue steel, as long as a man's arm from elbow to fingertips.
I took it off a raider, Nona frowned. Do you think the others are safe?
Clara puffed through her lips.
Don't know. We need to find Ara, though, and the rest of them. Raider? One of the ones that chased us?
She glanced back along the track and scanned the trees more slowly.
They're going to want that sword back.
No, Nona said.
They're not. Come on.
She set off at a jog.
Wait up!
Clara hurried to catch up.
Are they after you?
Someone might be, and we need to find the others.
Someone?
Suspicion crossed Clara's face. She looked nervous.
You're not making a lot of sense.
Save your breath for running. Nona led off as the wind started to build. The edge of the squall caught them before they'd covered 50 yards, whipping the screw pines into a frenzy, howling between the trunks, seizing icicles as long as Nona's blade, and shying them across the track.
You...
You killed the person who had that sword, didn't you? Clara ducked beneath a broken length of icicle, Hanska swift. They're not alive anymore. The wind took whatever answer Clara had to that, and for the next 10 minutes they ran in a maelstrom of ice, wind, and flying branches, dodging what they could, relying on the thickness of their coats and hoods to take the brunt of any impacts they failed to avoid. An hour later they were crunching their way through frozen puddles on a lane between beleaguered potato fields. The hedgerows bore scattered stands of whore-apple, the dark red fruit glistening with frost.
"Where is she? Typical Ara. She's going to have me running all the way to the Kring."
Clara pulled level again.
"You're very keen to find Ara," Nona said, eyeing her friend. "I didn't think you liked her." "Well, I do," Clara snatched a breath. "And you should throw that sword away. It's weighing you down. You're hardly going to use it. We haven't moved past knife work yet."
"I should throw this sword away?" Nona slowed.
"It must weigh a ton."
Nona came to a halt. She held the sword up between them.
"I should throw it away?"
She met Clara's dark gaze.
"I don't need it."
Clara looked away, her eyes on the track ahead.
"Nona!"
Nona let the sword fall. It fell point first and stuck in the ground between them.
"Come on, then!"
And she ran on.
"Hey! Novices!"
The cry came from behind them. Nona and Clara stumbled to a halt and turned. A moment later, Nona had Ara in her arms. The Jotsis heir, eyes bright, face reddened by the wind, returned the hug, grinning.
"Who are you, and where have you hidden, Nona?"
Ara squeezed her and stood back.
"Since when are you a hugger?"
"I'm your shield. You have to hold your shield tight." Nona glanced around at Ara's cold camp. Just the windbreak and a log to sit on.
"We have to find Zol next." "What the hell for?"
Clara looked suddenly fierce.
"Zol?"
Ara's smile fell away.
"She's Tarkax's responsibility. We need to find Jula and Ruli."
"Zol," Nona confirmed. "Because Sister Apple isn't looking after you anymore.
And we need Tarkax in case anyone makes a move on you. Also, the countryside is thick with Dernish raiders. I saw another party 2 miles back. That's the third I've seen." "Sister Apple wasn't looking after me in the first place."
Ara glanced around as if the poisoner might be standing behind a tree.
"Was she?" "More raiders. I didn't see any."
Clara turned to look back along the road.
"We need to get moving."
Nona started back towards the track.
"Nona!"
Both of them shouting. Nona stopped and turned back towards them.
"Sister Apple was shadowing you. She's a senior sister of discretion. You would hardly expect to see her. And yes, Clara, more raiders. They didn't see us in the squall, or did, and weren't interested. They may be next time."
She set off again.
"Let's go,"
offered over her shoulder. Ara wanted to know how Nona knew about Sister Apple's presence, or absence, given the impossibility of spotting a Grey Sister who didn't want to be seen. So while they hastened along the road, Nona told them the whole story, except for the part about Zol being a four-blood prophecy-fulfilling legend. She wasn't entirely happy with that part herself. Not that she wanted to be Sister Wheel's darling or anything. It just didn't make sense. By giving Zol into the church's care, Shirzal had made Abbess Glass trust her intentions. It was a precious gift. It removed any suspicion that the Emperor's sister wanted to steal Ara or Nona to control the Argatha or the prophecy. She had just given Abbess Glass the Argatha and put into her hands control of the prophecy, fake though it might be. And yet, Nona knew that Shirzal's intentions were not to be trusted. She had tried to abduct Ara, and she had put Yisht into the convent to steal the Shipheart. Had Zol just been the price she was prepared to pay for the chance to steal it? When Nona had finally laid the whole thing out for them, Ara seemed satisfied.
"So,
If you spent the morning hunting the forest and helping Sister Kettle, that explains why you had to run so hard to catch up with me, Ara jogged on, gathering her breath. But you said Clara was racing to catch up with you. So why was she so far behind, too? Sister Tallow said to take things slow and steady. So since I got clear of the chaos at the river, I've been doing just that. Both of them turned to look at Clara running beside them, red-faced, holding her side. Under their stares, she stumbled to a halt.
I need a rest. I can't run all the way to the Pring. There's the best part of 60 miles left.
Why were you so far behind, Ara? Nona asked.
Got lost. I said already, all right?
Clara scowled, exasperated.
I'm a city girl. You may have been brought up by wolves, and Arabella here might have had estates to hunt on. But I know streets and markets and houses, and if I see 3 trees together, I know I've gone the wrong way.
Shelter that second night came in the form of a pigsty among a collection of hovels that made Nona's village look prosperous. Their initial welcome was the 2 points of a pitchfork, and a hasty assembling of fierce-eyed peasants armed with hatchet and hoe. Through Ara's smooth diplomacy, the opening offer of brutal murder was negotiated down to room in the unoccupied sty on fresh straw, and the threat of violence if they tried anything funny. Clara, fishing in her habit in the privacy of their new accommodation, came out with a handful of silver, from which she dug out a copper, and went on to purchase a slab-like loaf of black bread and a wrap of rancid butter.
"Where did you get all that money?"
Nona asked, chewing on her portion of the loaf.
"I told you, my father's fortunes have changed."
Clara's jaw bulged as she ground away at the bread. It seemed as if more grit had been used than flour. She played her gold sovereign across her knuckles.
"The church teaches faith. Well, what you learn is that it's money that moves mountains. The church preaches the ancestors' creed, but it's gold that talks. Everything we do, all this business of emperors and temples, all the war, alliances, murders, hospitals, all of it floats on money. The currents that move these things, make them dance, are all financial. Politics, religion, love, faith, even hate, are just the things people say. This," she held a coin before her eye between finger and thumb, "this is what they mean."
"That's a shallow view of the world, Clara," Ara watched from the corner, hunched in her ice-rimmed coat.
"Says the girl whose whole life was built on gold."
"There are things that can't be bought or sold," Nona said. Clara shook her head.
"Some would say everything has its price, and that it's often surprisingly cheap. Others, that if a thing cannot be bought, it has no value."
"What about friendship?" Nona asked.
"Ah," Clara lay back, settling herself to sleep. "There, you have to be careful."
Ara had managed to establish that several novices had passed through the village hours before them. But how many novices or hours proved difficult to pin down? Nona doubted that there were any behind them, though, not unless the Derns had them. The novices took turns watching through the night. Nona spent her hours staring at the darkness, wondering if Sister Kettle still lived, and what horrors Sister Apple might have wrought upon her attackers, if not. She wondered, too, at the raiders she had seen, lying at broken angles where the Noiguan had left them. They'd been young men, pale with short, fair beards and eyes the blue of cornflowers. She wondered what had driven them across the sea. They looked too well-fed, too well-equipped, to have come so far in order to terrorize peasants in their shacks. Does a man with a good iron sword cross an ocean to steal a half-starved goat? She watched the darkness and painted the raiders across it, breathing life back into their pale limbs. Would they come this far inland, or retreat now, fearing to be cut off when the Emperor's new armies arrived? No raiders came in the night, or if they did, they moved on, hoping for richer pickings than promised by the cluster of hovels. The three girls got up as the sky paled, and set off towards the valley, a shallow one that stretched east and north towards the distant hills, where the sun would soon rise.
She said it was the only way through, the only easy way anyhow, and if we want to catch the others, we want the quickest path.
Clara had taken the lead. The old woman who extorted a copper from her, for last night's bread, had also furnished her with directions to Eamon's Cut, a gorge that she claimed to be the only safe passage through the colourfully named Devil's Spine. Nona could tell from the terrain that some river of ice had pressed forward here as it once had across the Grey, but more recently, perhaps only a century or two earlier, retreating to leave the bedrock scraped bare of soil, fierce ridges standing where veins of harder stone ran. The spine was one such vein of obdurate granite left standing, where the slow, implacable currents of the ice carved softer rock away. It stood perhaps 1,000 yards proud of its surroundings, but near vertical, and honed to a razor edge running north and south for 12 miles and more. The novices had heard of the Devil's Spine. Ara had even seen it before as a small child, a curiosity on a trip to visit some or other far-flung fruit of her family tree. But not until they drew close, harried by the ice wind, did they properly appreciate the wisdom in seeking an easy passage from one side to the other.
"We'll go to Eamon's Cut and press on. We'll catch the rest or we won't. We can meet them at the Kring if not," Clara said. "Apart from not having Ruly, this is the group we're going to be in anyway."
Crossing the rock wastes took longer than anticipated. Fissures ran across the stone miles long, yards wide in places. In other areas the stone lay pockmarked with sinkholes, some filled with dark water, some empty with sharp edges, some wide enough to drown in, some small enough to trap a foot and break an unwary ankle. By late afternoon they had spotted the cut. By early evening they had reached the approach. The three novices wound their way through a maze of rocky gullies that snaked in confusion across the fractured rock, up towards the cut, still almost 1/2 mile off. The wind that had plagued them since leaving the Rock of Faith slackened, as if daunted by the Devil's Spine, growing fitful.
"It's changing," Ara said.
"We might find we have a corridor wind tomorrow to blow us the rest of the way to the Kring," Clara said.
Nona hoped so. Her father had hunted up on the ice most of his life, whereas she had spent most of hers hiding behind whatever walls she could find when the ice winds blew. 3 days bearing up under its breath had only deepened the respect she felt for him. It added a new dimension to her concerns over Yisht. Would a woman raised in such a place truly let her ambitions be thwarted by children, or forget the indignity that heaped upon her? A break in the clouds scattered sunlight across the ridged rock. Nona stopped in her tracks. Just as there's a power in many clear voices, ringing in harmonies, it lives too in the shadows of clouds and in the light moving across landscapes, watched in still moments.
"It is changing," Clara started up again. "We'll be home and safe in the warm before we know it. I'm going to buy everything in the pillared market."
Her chatter had a nervousness to it. She seemed distracted, glancing around. "We should..." Nona bit off the words, eyes upon the pebble that had just bounced past her. She made a slow turn, poised to spring. Ahead of her, Ara and Clara came to a halt. Tarkak stood in the mouth of a small cave some way back along the gully. They had passed just 10 yards beneath without seeing him. He beckoned to them, an urgent gesture, one finger to his lips. Behind him in the shadows they could see a smaller figure in a range coat.
"Come on!"
Nona started off towards the warrior.
"No!" Clara called after her. "We need to push on. You can't trust him."
Nona looked back. Clara hadn't moved. Ara stumbled to a halt halfway between them.
"That's why we're here," Nona said. "We came to find Tarkax. Sister Kettle told me to. So Ara has a guard over her now Sister Apple's gone. Trusting him is the whole point."
"Well, I don't,"
Clara raised her arm towards Eamon's cut.
That's where we need to go. That's the path to our target. Sister Tallow is waiting there. She'll have half the convent's Red Sisters with her now. They know how serious it is with the Dernish.
I told Kettle we'd find Tarkax, Nona said, frowning.
Well, we've found him. Now, let's go,
Clara said.
Remember who he is. I saw him at the Kaltis talking to Yisht. If we hadn't put her in a barrel, it would be her standing in that cave. It would be her that Sister Kettle told you to find to look after Ara. Did you trust Yisht?
Nona didn't answer that, just glanced back towards Tarkax, now crouched further back in the shadow of the cave's entrance.
Let's go!
Clara started back along the gully towards the cut.
No, Clara!
Nona had promised Kettle. She had sworn to a dying woman. To her friend.
Come on!
She waved Ara after her and hurried up across the steep slope towards the warrior of the Ice Tribes.
Nona?
Ara followed, but slower, faltering.
What about Clara?
She'll follow us, Nona said, unsure of whether she wanted it to be true.
Nona reached the cave first. Tarkax remained crouched, his eyes not straying to her but keeping to the ridges and gullies. Nona moved past him, seeing in surprise that the gloom held four novices. Her eyes had yet to adjust, but one of them was so large she could only be Darla. Ignoring them for the moment, Nona turned to see Ara coming past Tarkax and running up behind her, a wrathful Clara looking ready to punch someone.
Nona!
Jula and Ruli closed on her from both sides.
Glad the Dernish didn't chop you up, squirt!
Darla pulled her hood back. She had a black eye and a bloody nose. Nona wondered how the other person looked. Zol glanced her way but said nothing, remaining close to Tarkax.
Why are you here?
Nona asked it, of the cave in general.
There are soldiers waiting by the cut.
Tarkax didn't turn his head.
Perhaps a dozen. They're in ambush position, so it's hard to tell.
Raiders, Ara said. This far inland?
Soldiers,
Tarkax corrected.
Not Dernmen.
What's the problem with soldiers?
Clara remained at the mouth of the cave, out past Tarkax.
The Emperor's general probably dispatched them to hold the pass in case the Dernish came this way in force.
Get in, out of sight, girl!
Tarkax waved Clara behind him.
And they're not the Emperor's men. No uniforms. I killed two in the gullies. One died slower than the other. Said he was a Taxis man.
They're in Taxis, Ruli held Nona's arm. But he said he'd leave Nona alone. He swore it to the Emperor.
He didn't swear he wouldn't come after Ara, though, Clara said.
Tarkax edged back from the entrance.
Some men will swear anything to anyone to get what they want. I wouldn't place much faith in Taxis words.
He drew his Tular, the flat blade hissing from its scabbard, sounding just like Yisht's had back in the tunnels.
They're coming. They must have sent more scouts out and spotted you.
We can't stay here.
Ara started towards the entrance.
We need to run.
Tarkax lowered his blade into her path.
We'd be caught and killed in the open. Here they can only come at us from one direction.
There's 12 of them!
Darla from the rear of the cave. Tarkax rolled his head and shrugged.
On the right ground, 12, I can take. You, in the cave!
It had taken the best part of an hour before the shout came. Perhaps the Taxis men had spread out to encircle and catch the prey they expected to run. Nona had seen few hours pass more slowly, as if she clung to every heartbeat of it with Hunska battle speed. Tarkax had returned his sword to its scabbard and told them Sister Tallow would bring the Red Sisters out looking for them in 2 days. He also said that they would all be dead or on their way again before sunset, so whatever Sister Tallow might do was of no relevance.
Nona,
Ara leaned forward, her face in shadow.
Are you all right? There's something odd about your eyes.
We've more to worry about than my eyes.
Nona looked away towards the brightness beyond the rocky entrance. The shout came again.
You! In the cave! Only my voice.
Tarkax held a finger to his lips and backed towards the bunched novices, coming to stand between Zol and Ara.
They mustn't know who or how many stand with me.
He cupped his hands and called out.
You! Outside! We want the girl! Send her out and we'll go! I met two of your number in the gully to the east,
Tarkax shouted back.
They have joined the ancestor. I am Tarkax, the Ice Spear. If you want the girl, you must come and take her.
He glanced over his shoulder.
They'll waste an hour finding their dead, if we're lucky.
Why would they do that? Ara asked.
There's a lot to learn from dead men,
Tarkax said.
Were they shot with an arrow, taken from behind, garrotted, killed in the same place or apart, by one person or more? Were the attackers bleeding when they left?
He shrugged.
A cautious man would want to know. These soldiers, they know my name. Now they wish to learn if the man calling it to them is really Tarkax. Perhaps they will wait until they can bring more troops. The longer they spend out in the open growing cold, the better it is for us.
You couldn't really kill 12, could you?
Ara asked. The warrior puffed out his chest.
I am Tarkax.
He winced and started to turn.
Ow!
Ara's face creased with sudden pain, and she too started to turn. Nona was already spinning around when she felt the sharp jab in the side of her neck. As she turned, Nona saw Clara tangled with Zol, both of them twisting, punching, blocking with a speed that only a Hunska full-blood could hope to follow. They fell together, Clara beneath the Ice Tribe girl.
Get Zol off her!
Ara dived in, snatching at her wrist and missing. Tarkax stood unmoving for what seemed an age at fight speed, long enough for Ara to finally catch Zol's arm and hang on despite a kick to the stomach. Nona just watched, flooded with a cold certainty and hot despair. Jula, Ruli, and Darla also stood statue still, but trapped in the moment as any without Hunska blood would be. Clara tore free, bleeding from the mouth, a hank of her dark hair in Zol's fist as Ara wrestled the girl from the ice away, gaining momentary advantage from the fact that the whole of her attention was aimed at Clara. For his part, Tarkax threw himself back and to the left, towards the cave wall, and Nona watched, her neck stung where the venom-coated pin had been jabbed in. Ara held Zol atop her, her arms looped beneath Zol's armpits, her hands clamped behind Zol's head and both legs wrapped around the Ice Triber. But Zol still somehow managed to reach down and grip beneath Ara's ribcage, causing her to cry out in excruciating pain. It was all the chance Zol needed to twist out of the hold. She rolled across the floor towards Clara. Nona didn't act. She couldn't act. She had to see this played out. She had to believe it. She stood and she watched through slitted eyes. Tarkax landed beside his backpack and tore it open. Zol rose from her roll, hurling herself bodily at Clara. Clara's foot aimed at her face, caught her collarbone and brought her down with a snapping sound, the whole of Clara's thigh muscle absorbing the girl's momentum. Tarkax, fumbling, brought out a leather wrap from among his supplies and began to unroll it. It held close on a dozen small leather tubes, sealed with wax and sewn to the wrap. A throwing star blurred across Nona's vision and took the leather strip, tubes and all, from Tarkax's grip. Clara's throwing star. Ara got up, stiffly. Zol rolled to her side and jerked into a sitting position, eyes blazing. Tarkax drew his tulor in a stuttering motion.
You?
Ara stared at Clara, horrified. She took an awkward step towards her.
Why?
She had to jerk her whole body around to take the next step. Zol tried to stand, but fell to her side. Tarkax staggered forward and tumbled, the sword flying from his hand, his head hitting the rocks hard.
money, said Clara, rising smoothly to her feet. Lots of money. Enough gold to raise my family to the Sis, and more besides.
She turned to look at Nona, still standing where she had stood since the first sharp prick of betrayal.
It's Ara he wants, Nona. Thurin Taxus swore to the Emperor not to harm you. He'll take her, get his concessions from the Jotsis, and sell her back. All through third parties. She won't lose anything but a month or two and some family prospects. And that scarcely matters if she's to be a Red Sister.
Clara stepped closer.
So you see, it's hardly anything.
Closer still. Close enough to whisper. I'll miss you, Nona. She pulled her head back and stared.
What the hell is wrong with your eyes? They're black. Every bit.
Nona's fist connected with the side of Clara's head. The sort of solid blow that puts an end to conversations and to fights. She was at Tarkax's pack almost before Clara hit the ground, but she felt as though she were running through a bad dream. Clara would abandon her for as little as money? Trust, Sister Apple had said, was the most insidious of poisons. It hurt Nona to know how well she had learned that lesson.
Tie her up, quick!
She threw the rope from the warrior's pack at Darla.
Quick! Gag her too!
A moment later she had the leather wrap, crouching so as not to be seen from outside the cave. Clara's throwing star, the four-pointed one from Partners Reeve, was stuck in it. The contents of four tubes dripped from the leather, unstoppered by the impact. She brought it back across the cave and threw herself down beside Tarkax.
Which one? Which one?
She waved it before his face, but his eyes were unfocused, blood leaking from beneath his cheek and forehead where he had struck a rock. He had been reaching for the antidote. She knew that. But which tube was it in? She couldn't risk using the wrong one. She might dose him with a whole new poison. Rising, Nona went to Ara and held her face in both hands, putting herself in her eyeline.
You've been poisoned, Ara. Clara jabbed you with a needle. It was coated with lock-up. Tincture of Segrin root? You had it before, first day with the poisoner. You'll be fine.
She glanced across to Ruli, standing helpless, watching as Darla and Jula bound the unconscious Clara.
Help me lie her down.
Together they lay Ara on the ground, the unnatural stiffness of her limbs unpleasant to touch.
Your eyes, Nona.
Ruli looked up from her examination of Ara, one hand still twined in the gold of her hair.
What's wrong with them?
Nona reached up to touch them.
I don't know. I can see. They don't hurt. But they're black. Like someone poured ink into them.
Ruli looked frightened, but there was plenty more to be frightened about than odd eyes.
I took the black cure, the one I made with Hessa and Ara.
Ruli's fear turned to horror.
Why? Why would you do that?
Nona pointed towards the brightness of the slopes.
Those soldiers haven't just come for Ara. I don't care what promises Thurin Taxus made, or where he made them. Raymel Taxus wants his revenge, and someone out there knows that if they don't go back with me, they may as well not go back at all. Maybe all of them know that. And if they come, I'm going to go down fighting, not poisoned and helpless, ready to be bound and carried off to some torture chamber.
It was almost true. She had put the vial to her lips when she heard that the soldiers were advancing on the cave, worried that they might carry venoms to take her alive. But what had made her tip it into her mouth? That had been the memory of Clara coming back off the plateau, having brewed the catweed liquor. She had blamed the stink on poor Malkin, because, despite the plant's name, Sister Apple's silly rhyme held truth. Catweed didn't smell like a cat weed, but Segrin root did. I took it because I didn't trust my friend. That was the truth, and like many truths, it was hard, and it hurt. When Nona raided Sister Apple's stores, she had stolen catweed and Segrun root along with anything else that looked useful. After Clara's alchemy out on the plateau, some of both were missing. The Segrun root cut to disguise the loss. But Nona had spotted it anyway, because the smell had made her suspicious. And hating herself, she had checked up on Clara. Nona had come on the ranging knowing that Clara was carrying lockup. She just hadn't quite known why.
"Zol's talking."
Jula was crouched beside the girl that Shazal had set among them, the Foreblood come to claim her place in history. "Tokax got the biggest dose, then Ara, then me. Zol got jabbed in the fight, but Clara must have been running out of needles, or used one twice."
"Kill her."
Zol watched Nona kneel beside her, her black eyes dull. "I'm not killing her," Nona said. Whatever Clara had done, she was Nona's friend. It wasn't a bond made for breaking. "She's well tied."
"Kill."
"No," Nona snapped the word. "Tell me what Shazal wants. We're probably going to die here, so you may as well. The Taxis aren't going to want to leave witnesses. Tell me, and I'll do my best to draw things out so you've got a chance to face this on your feet."
"Argatha."
Zoe forced the word past a locked jaw.
"I know she doesn't want that."
Nona frowned.
"She did, once. But something changed. She gave you to the Abbess." "Argatha, not Foreblood."
"Yes, it is. That's what the prophecy says. Foreblood speaking with one voice and the Ark will listen."
"Four hearts." "Oh, gods."
Nona looked around. Only Darla and Jula were on their feet, both looking blank.
"Yisht?"
"Yisht," Nona nodded.
"Shazal's after four ship hearts, not one Foreblood. And Yisht's not going to have given up on getting the one from the convent."
Nona bent back down to Zol.
"What can the Ark do?"
Zol shook her head, just a faint vibration of movement.
"You don't know?"
"No."
"I know,"
Jula said, her voice faint.
"You?"
"Well,"
Jula spread her hands,
"I know what the books in the convent library say about it. Some of them, anyway. I helped Tessa research it. It's what she's been doing for 2 years while we trained to fight."
"And?"
Nona wasn't sure why she cared. There were soldiers out in the gully with swords in hand and murder on their minds.
"What do the books say?"
"They say a lot of things. Miracles, cures, wisdom, all those things."
"So they tell us nothing."
Nona had harbored suspicions about whether anything of worth might be found in a book.
"Hessa said there's a common thread,"
Jula said.
"That's how she found the right books. She's very good with thread work. Better than..."
"Tell me,"
Nona barked. In her mind's eye, the soldiers were already advancing, spread across the slopes, the sun's red light bleeding across their blades.
"Most accounts agree that the Ark can take us to the Hope, just like the four tribes were brought here in their ships. And...
Nona remembered Shazal's smile when Ara tried to cow her with the power of the path. She hadn't looked like a woman who would go to all these lengths to run away to a distant sun, even one that burned so white amid heavens scattered with the red embers of dying stars.
"And it controls the moon. It can turn it, change the focus."
"Ancestor!"
Ruli covered her mouth with a hand.
"Shit!"
Darla let her jaw drop.
"Gods!"
Nona shook her head. A person who could steer the moon wouldn't want to flee Abeth. They would own Abeth.
"Send out Nona Reeve!"
The shout came from outside.
"The rest of you can go free!"
"I thought Clara said they wanted Ara."
Ruli looked confused. "They lied to her. Raymel is behind this, not Thurin." Nona wondered what would have happened if the Taxus agent had told Clara the truth. Would her price have gone up because of their friendship, or down because Nona had nobody to avenge her? She wondered how long Clara had been slipping into the Taxus pocket. What information had she first sold to turn that copper penny into a silver crown?
"Send out Nona Reeve!"
On the floor, Clara opened her eyes and started to struggle in her bonds, grunting around the strip of cloth that Darla had gagged her with. How long had she been feigning unconsciousness? Just one more deception. And why this sudden panic? Nona met her gaze and realized she felt anger, but no hate. Her friend would never have sold her. The Taxus had used Clara, tricked her, played on her resentment of Ara's wealth.
"Just the girl!"
shouted from the slope. Nona spun around.
"I'll go to them, but we're going to have to fight either way."
"Fight?"
Darla snorted and kicked Clara into stillness.
"With what? We're going fists against swords?"
Nona pressed Clara's throwing star into Ruli's palm. "That's one dead, right there." She retrieved Tarkax's forgotten Tuler from the shadows, surprised by the weight of it, and put it into Darla's hands.
"Get his jacket and trews on. You're not that much bigger. Keep your hood. If they're scared of you, it gives you an edge."
She bent and pulled the long knife and hatchet from Tarkax's belt. Close up, he smelled of wood smoke and a spice she didn't recognize.
"Jula, take these."
She pushed them at her.
"What are you going to use?"
Jula asked, the weapons trembling in her grip. She was a natural warrior despite her affection for books, but also terrified. And why not? The Taxus soldiers would make as short work of the novices as Partners Reeves' apprentices had. They were adults against children, and well-trained. Darla might be a man's match in strength, but she held an unfamiliar sword, and it shook in a white-knuckled grip. Also, there were 12 out there, and in the cave, Nona was the only Hunska standing.
"Let me tell you a story," she said.
"What?"
Darla seemed unimpressed, angry at her own fear. "A story." Nona motioned for them to sit. "We have time. If they weren't going to check Tarkax's kills, then they would have rushed us by now."
"What story?"
Ruli asked, turning the throwing star over and over in her hand, her gaze on Clara.
"A true story."
Nona looked across to where Ara lay watching, trapped in her poisoned body.
"I lied before, about why my village gave me to the child taker, why my mother left them. I lied, and lied again. Now it's time to tell the truth."
She had their attention now. Even Darla, whom she had told no lies, would have heard the story from others. Perhaps even Zol knew it.
"A juggler once came to my village. He was my first friend."
And Nona let the words run from her tongue. It had been the truth that she told the second time, of how Amondo had left and her mother blamed Nona for it. And Nona had believed her mother even though the reasons were beyond her understanding. It had been the truth when she said that she had followed the juggler, taking directions from Mother Sybil out in the far fields. It had all been the truth up until the first trees of the Relum forest rose around the road. "Everywhere has its ghosts," Amondo had said. "But in most places those ghosts are at least hidden in the corners, or tucked away at right angles to the world waiting their moment. In the Relum forest you could see the ghosts, patterned on the gloom beneath the canopy, the distortion of their faces frozen into the bark of ancient trunks. And you could hear them, too, screaming into the silence, not quite breaking it, but making it tremble. I followed, not caring about ghost or fairy, because when a true fear takes hold of you, it drives out the others, the ones people try to give you, try to put into the heart of you with stories and dark looks. A true fear grows in the bones of you. I followed because I thought that if I turned back then, I would keep turning back, turning away from every other fear, from every new thing, and that I would never leave that place to which my father had brought me. I would live, toil, grow old and die, all within sight of my mother's hut, and the ice would remain forever a line glimpsed in the distance, and I wouldn't matter to the world, nor would it matter to me. That was a bigger fear than the shadows between the trees. I let the path lead me, not stopping, for it's when you stop that things catch up with you, and not quickening my pace, for in a haunted forest any increase in the speed with which you walk is a slippery slope to blind panic, and the mad dash that sees you lost in the deep wood with a broken ankle. I walked until it grew too dark to see the trail, and then I sat with my back to an oak and watched the dark. Rain came, thick with sleet, pattering down among the leaves, gathering and dripping, sliding to the forest floor with the soft wet sounds imagination can fashion into nightmare. When the focus came, it woke me, first patterning the world in glowing red and black shadow, the undergrowth writhing beneath the sharp relief of branches. As the ground began to steam, I thought I heard a shout, far off, and I took to the trail, running hard, knowing it would be Amando. I met him on the path, rushing towards me out of the fog as fast as I was running towards him. He nearly flattened me, but I'm quick, and I slipped aside at the last second. It happened so swiftly that he didn't even see me. I shouted after him, but he was lost in the pink blanket of the fog. I thought he was gone, but the sound of his feet pounding the track stopped in one sudden moment. "Nona! It's me! I followed you! Dear ancestor, hide! Hide in the trees!" I heard the sounds of his pursuit, more pounding feet, more shouts and cries. "Bleed me!" And Amando came running back, the hot mist swirling as it released him. He grabbed my arm and dragged me off the track, out into the forest. The thorns tore my skirt and cut my legs. "Shh!" Amando pulled me behind a tree, one hand over my mouth. The band chasing him thundered by, clinking metal, rasping breaths, heavy boots. A minute later, Amando drew his hand away and unclenched the other from around my arm. "Why were they chasing you?" "I owe them something."
"Why did you leave?"
"I wore out my welcome on the first day, Nona. The real question is, why would anyone stay?" The focus was passing, and already the fog lay in streamers being trailed through the tree trunks by the wind. The moon's light, no longer fierce, showed Amando's face, worried and watchful. "I want to know..." "People always want to know things, until they hear them, and then it's too late. Knowledge is a rug of a certain size, and the world is larger. It's not what remains uncovered at the edges that should worry you. Rather, what is swept beneath."
"I don't understand."
He didn't look like the juggler who had thrown and caught for a heel of bread. He looked older, and sadder, and wiser. "There's a line, Nona. A burning line that runs through the world. It runs through dreams, and beneath roots, and across the sky. And it leads to you."
"Me?"
I asked. It didn't seem likely.
"Why?"
He managed a smile. "We're back to knowledge again. The important thing is that those men who were chasing me, one of them can follow that line. He calls it a thread. A clever man with clever fingers. He can tie 3 knots in an eyelash, that one. And he'll keep on following that thread. He didn't want to go into the village to get you, so he sent me."
"You were there to get me out?"
I felt a numbness prickling across my cheekbones, and a hollowness in my stomach.
"But you said we were..."
And a fine job you've done of it, Amondo.
A deep voice rolled out from the direction of the track. Figures moved from shadow to moonlight to shadow. Tall men in uniform, swords at their hips. The soft metal whisper of mail shirts.
Just when I was starting to doubt you.
A laugh.
Nobody took her. Not even itinerant juggler. She ran away by herself. Brilliant!
The soldiers closed on us from all sides. Two seized Amondo's arms, another took me by the scruff of my neck. The leader, the one Amondo said could follow my thread, moved out into the moonlight. He wasn't old, not much older than Amondo, but he didn't look like us. Not like a real person. He didn't look hungry. His beard came rolling down to the bottom of his neck, and there wasn't a spot of dirt in it. His cloak was scarlet even in the moonlight, and the silver bands across his shoulders shone bloody with it.
"We still have to hurt you, of course," he said. "For the running."
He motioned to the two soldiers, and they began to twist Amondo's arms. He cried out immediately.
"And then, of course, we have to kill you,"
the man added when Amondo paused, his scream to gasp in a breath.
"To keep this secret."
That's when I did it. I reached around to where the man had hold of my neck, and I cut him. Skin, muscle, tendons, arteries. Sister Tallow is right. Men are just like pigs inside. And his blood shot out so fast that it drenched my shoulders, even though I was already moving as fast as I knew how to. I knew I had to reach the man with the beard, the man with the clever fingers, without giving him the chance to show any of his cleverness. I slashed him across the stomach before he even noticed I was loose. I cut him, and the bright rings of his mail made bright little sounds as they broke open. He noticed then, and folded up, hugging his belly. I cut that beard of his with another slash, and left him torrenting blood from an open throat. Then it was all running and slicing and screaming. I climbed up one man who tried to chase me around a tree with his knife. I dug my blades into his back and hauled myself up him. A foot on his belt thrust my blades into his neck, heaved up. I jumped from his shoulders onto the last of them. She still had a hand on Amondo's arm, her other one on her sword hilt, half drawn. And when it was done, and they were sprawled among the bushes, and the trees were splashed with gore and cut here and there where the soldiers had swung their swords, I stood in the middle of it all wearing their blood and screaming. And I was screaming for more. And Amondo ran. Although he was my friend, and I had saved him, he ran. And that's how they found me the next morning. And that's my secret. And that's why my mother let them give me away. I'm a monster. Nona started to walk towards the cave mouth, and the day that was dying on the slopes just beyond. That's my secret, and my shame. I'm Nona Gray. War is in my veins, and the screams of my enemies are music to me.
"Wait!" Darla shouted. "That's nonsense! Where did you get your knives from? How did you know how to use them? How did you kill six warriors?"
Nona turned and slashed a hand across the wall. A shower of fragments scattered out across the cave floor, and where she had struck, four gouges remained in the stone, deep and dark.
"But they had swords!"
Darla waved hers for good measure. "Never try to swing one in a forest," Nona said, "and never underestimate a wild animal, however small it might be." Darla had no reply. She set her fingers to the cuts Nona had left in the rock and stared in wonder.
"Scarlet and silver?"
Ruli spoke from the back of the cave where she had crouched, listening to Nona's story.
"What?"
With the truth out, Nona ached to leave, before they properly understood what she had told them.
The man was in scarlet and silver. Were the others in uniform?
Nona tried to see it. She saw blood mostly, and wounds.
Perhaps?
Yes.
Those are Shazal's colours, Ruli said. The head man at your village would have known that. He would have known that they couldn't keep you, not with the Emperor's own sister after you. Your mother would have understood too. The child taker was your best chance, hiding in plain sight. A girl with a price on her head, sold for nothing, there in a cage ready for sale. It was all they could do to keep you safe.
No, Nona waved the idea away as if her blades could slice it into a lie.
It wasn't like that. They would have told me.
Really?
Ruli stood up, staring at Nona with concern. It was more than she could take.
Not telling you was more likely to stop you coming back.
I'm going out there. Nona started back towards the cave mouth. Once it starts, you...
Nona, there are 12 of them.
Jula stepped after her, though stopping short, as if she saw something new in Nona's place. Some wild beast, perhaps, with eyes like holes into the night and hands thick with old blood.
You might have,
Ruli frowned, staring at Nona's hands.
Invisible daggers, but they have swords as long as you are tall. And we're not in a dark, misty forest. Don't go.
I have the path, Ruli. Nona offered a faint smile.
You have the path at the convent, Ruli said. But let's be honest, you're not very good with it there. Ara is much better, and Hessa, she knows more about threads than Sister Pan does already. But isn't that the whole point of Shazal wanting the ship heart? This far from it, even a holy witch finds it hard to touch the path. And your serenity, well, it's rubbish.
Ruli looked down.
Sorry.
I've given up on serenity, Nona smiled. It wasn't me. But I do have a new record on Blade Path.
Blade Path? Darla asked. What the hell has Blade Path got to do with anything?
New record? Ruli asked. You completed it.
Well. She looked around the cave. Tarkax lying in a pool of his own blood. Ara and Zol paralyzed. Clara bound and staring dazed over her gag.
Congratulations.
I used the grease, Nona said.
What?
The grease you gave me. I'd been doing it all wrong. I kept going slower and slower and falling off sooner and sooner. It felt wrong. It didn't fit. So I did what I do to reach the path. I ran at it. I cleaned the resin from my feet and greased my soles. Blade paths all downhill except the bits that aren't. And by the time you reach them, you're going fast enough to carry through.
But the corkscrew...
Ruli looked up at her, blinking.
If you're going fast enough, you can slide around the inside.
Nona grinned.
It's wonderful. Everything fits together. All the choices, all the balancing. They happen at fight speed. They make sense.
I did it in 30 counts.
30 counts? Ruli gasped. That's impossible.
It's not as fast as Sister Owl, Nona said. But I was pleased with it.
I still don't care, Darla said. How is that silly game going to help against what's out there?
She waved her sword towards the slope.
But it's not just a game, Nona said. We do it for a reason.
Balance and timing, Jula said.
The Hunts could do it for that, but the Quant'll do it because it trains the mind for the path.
I suddenly saw everything in a new way.
Nona turned back towards the daylight.
An epiphany,
Jula breathed.
An epiphany.
Sister Kettle had taught Nona the word, but she hadn't found it on her lips when she wanted it. An epiphany. Seeing the world anew with new understanding. like when Sister Pan's trick pictures suddenly made sense, and you saw the bump as a whole.